Thank you for listening to the Keystone Church podcast. For more information about us, you can visit us at mykeystonechurch.com.
We're going to be talking about seeds this morning, but before we do, I'm sure you guys have heard Catherine talk about this, but she calls me a sleep diva. Jordan is also, okay, so I'm not the only one. Sleep divas. So here's the thing. What's weird about this is, like, you know, when it comes to food, like, I'll eat almost anything, like, and be very content, very happy. Like, I don't need, I'm not the guy, like, doing a very particular, like, order. But when it comes to sleep, man, I am the Karen at the Starbucks ordering, like, every, like, half splash of this and add that and remove that. And, like, when it comes to sleep, I am so particular. I don't take naps because that interferes with the flow of my physical awareness. I wake up disoriented, so I can't do naps. You know, it has to be a certain level of darkness. Like, I don't do well with noise. And so, yeah, so for years now, since she discovered it right after we got married, my nickname has been the Sleep Diva. It became mine.
It's David's
mask. It was like, hey, you're not using this, right?
Yep, 100%.
Pretty much. And that's carried on in my life. Like, you know, it's not like I want to be that way. And I'll, let's be honest, there's been seasons where I've been able to work really hard to, like, drown everything out and sleep pretty well throughout the night. But then I wake up and Catherine's like, oh, I woke up 4 times last night with the kids and all these other things. And I instantly feel completely guilty and selfish. And I'm like, I'm never doing that again. So I stay pretty sensitive when I'm sleeping. And that's been, you know, on the world race, we had some amazing stories. Like, we slept in a mud hut in Uganda. And they were not mice. They were rats. They were big. And so imagine, like, you're sleeping on this kind of, like, cot. In the corner of the room, like, the room's pitch black, and you've got this kind of open, like, jungle window behind you. And in the corner of the room, there's rats going up and down, and the walls don't go all the way to the ceiling. So at the top, they would run across the top of the wall and then go down the corner and then go back up. They'd crawl up the corner of the wall to the ceiling. And I'm like, I can't wrap my head around the idea that one of these things might climb on me in the middle of the night. So I have my flashlight in bed with me, and I wake up every single time there's one of those, and I shine the flashlight and I scare it up the, you know, up out of the room. And so that was how I slept in Uganda, or didn't sleep. So this is all going somewhere, I promise, but a quick story. So the other night, you know, I woke up 4 different times, and each time it was something totally different and totally weird. So the first time I woke up to the dog just licking her paws, really, really loudly. And, you know, at first it, like, I heard it, and then I'm like, okay, whatever, and I try to go back to sleep, and she gets louder. She just so loud, it fills up the room. And so that woke me up, and I couldn't sleep. Then we had, you know, one of the kids had an accident, so I had to help with that. Somebody else had growing pains. They're getting a pain in their knee. And then lastly, we have a Roomba upstairs. And I'll tell you, if you could throttle a robot, I would have throttled that Roomba. Just, it woke me up. That was the last straw for me. And it was just bouncing around, bumping into our door, going to the laundry room, eating up things it's not supposed to eat because there's junk all over the floor.
Because it really isn't supposed to be running.
It's not supposed to. We don't have it scheduled. And I can't turn it off. I can't figure out how to turn off the schedule. So this was my night. And so, So just the other day, I was at this conference in Woodland Park, and got to meet Bill Johnson, got to shake his hand and ask for a little bit of prayer, and then heard him teach. And so he starts teaching, and he starts talking about, he says, you know, I wake up 3 or 4 times a night. And instantly, I'm like, oh. Yeah, right? He has a Roomba too. I'm like, all right, I feel you. I know how that feels. That's awful, isn't it? I'm like ready for somebody to sympathize with my plight. And then Bill says, no, I wake up 3 or 4 times in the middle of the night. And when I do, I just turn my heart toward the Lord. And I just, and it's so good, but I'm sitting there like, oh, he's taking this a different direction. And he's just, I turn my heart towards the Lord and I just tell him I love him. And he said, the other day that he was praying, and he went into kind of his office to pray, and he just had this feeling of homesickness. And he was like, what is going on? This is really weird. Like when you leave, when you're a kid and you're like away from home for a while, that feeling. And he's like, this is really strange. Why am I feeling this, God? And he realized that for the last several nights, he had slept through the night completely, and he hadn't had any of those moments where he woke up and turned his heart toward the Lord. And it's not that he was sinning by not having those moments, but it was interesting that he was just talking about this passion, this desire to be in the presence of God, to connect with him, to engage with him, and that the loss of that for a couple of days started messing with him. And what's interesting is as he was telling this story, I'm sitting there and I'm like, I know exactly how to do that. I know exactly what that feels like. Even while he was speaking, I shut my eyes and I went into that place and I'm like, I know where you are, God. I know how to find you. I know how to encounter you. I know how to tell you I love you. I know how to be in that place of intimacy with you. But I was just thinking, that's not what I've been doing with my nights. And again, I don't think that I'm sinning by feeling a little grumpy about how many times I got woke up in the middle of the night. But what I began to realize as I was praying into this a little bit, because I felt like God had more for me to pull out of this. We live in a cause-effect kind of world. This happened, therefore I did this. We live in a world where almost everything that we think about comes out of a response to something else. And so our tendency is to live our lives like this happened to me, or you said this to me, or this event happened, and therefore I did this and responded this way. What the Lord began to show me is that when he looks at our lives, he's looking at effect cause. He's not looking at cause effect. See, God didn't create us to be just passive responders to our environment. He made us in his image, and God is an active, moving, engaging God. And in the same way, when something happens to us and we respond, the first thing that happened in that scenario is not what happened to us. The first thing that happens is our response. Does that make sense? I know chronologically something happens and then we respond. But what I'm saying is in the spirit, our response is the first step that results in the outcome that we're going to end up receiving. Let me phrase this another way. Your response to a challenge is not the fruit of the challenge. Your response to a challenge is the seed for your own outcome. So when we respond to a challenge and I say, well, the challenge hit me like this, therefore I did that. The fruit of that challenge was what I did. That's not how it works. In the realm of the spirit and the kingdom, what ends up happening is your response is a seed that brings about the fruit. Does that make sense? It doesn't matter what the challenge is. It doesn't matter what somebody did or said or what you encounter. I mean, here's the thing. The Lord will always take into account the struggles that we had no choice in. But at the end of the day, he's looking for, where did you start? What did you plant? What did you plant in that moment? Anytime we look to like assign blame for our reaction to someone or something else, we're missing a chance to intentionally plant something eternal. And instead, we accidentally end up planting a seed of offense. Anytime we look to assign blame for our actions to someone or something else, we miss a chance to plant something eternal, to intentionally plant something eternal, and we end up accidentally planting a seed of offense. And the thing is, I think about, you know, my sleep and being interrupted and all of this, and like, it's not that I'm offended at my kids or at the dog, you know, but I just generally get this sense of like, I'm just offended. I'm just not happy. and grumpy, you know, and grumbling. And you think of like the Israelites in the desert, like grumbling toward God. And like ultimately, when offense doesn't have a direction, it ends up going to him. Because the opposite of that heart mentality is gratitude. The opposite of a mentality of just like, this sucks, everything's bad, nothing's good right now. The opposite of that is gratitude, is being able to acknowledge and recognize, being able to just withdraw and turn to him and go, God, I love you. Like, hearing Bill talk now, I'm like, so you've been giving me all these moments and all these opportunities to just draw near to you and just take a couple seconds and tell you I love you. And I've been wasting it feeling bad for myself. We're always planting something. But we have to be intentional about what we're planting. So Galatians 6, verses 7 and 8 says this. It says, God will never be mocked. And this is in the Passion Translation. It says, God will never be mocked, for what you plant will always be the very thing that you harvest. The harvest you reap reveals the seed that you planted. If you plant the corrupt seeds of self-life into the natural realm, you can expect a harvest of corruption. If you plant the good seeds of spirit life, you will reap beautiful fruits that grow from the everlasting life of the Spirit. So, I mean, I feel like in a lot of ways, this verse is pretty self-explanatory. You know, what we sow is what we're going to reap. We're always planting something. We have to be intentional and aware of what we're planting. Even in the minor moments of life, I'm as soon as I started to get this, I started to put it into practice when my kids were being disruptive. Like, I started responding to them and realizing that my response to them is a seed. My response to them is not the fruit of their actions. And it began to change how I responded to my kids. It's impacted how I've tried to respond to Catherine the last couple days. And it's an exercise. It's something we put into effect. But something that struck me in that verse that I was praying about is it says, God will never be mocked. And I was like, how does that fit into what this is talking about? What does it mean? Why would God be mocked if I sow something and I reap something different? And so I was praying into that, and I felt like the Lord brought me to Hebrews 11. So my question to God was, why does it say God will not be mocked? In Hebrews 11, 6, it says, but without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. So I know these feel disconnected right now, but I want to pull them together. He's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. That means that there is a reward that's exclusive to those who seek God. That pursuit of God is a planting of a seed of desire. And the character of God is to reward that with growth, with intimacy, with his presence. The character of God is to reward our seeds of desire with his presence, with his encounter. For God to reward those who don't seek him in the same way would be a mockery of his character, his value, and the preciousness of his presence. You don't take a 20-carat diamond and just leave it out exposed. You actually put it in a precious place. You put it where it's going to be treasured. God has self-esteem. He knows his value. And so in that sense, he doesn't just offer the rewards of his presence to anyone. He actually reserves that for people that seek him. And so in that sense, what we sow is what we reap. God will not be mocked because he is a God who understands the value of seeking. He understands the value of planting a seed. And when we do that, what's going to come out of that is what we planted. So I hope that ties it together a little bit. I'm still digging into this idea, because this whole concept of, you know, God will not be mocked, what you sow is what you reap. It's important to God that the things of the kingdom have a value. They have worth. With my kids lately, one of the things that we've found is that we actually start looking for opportunities to reward them. So sometimes we know that they're about to face something difficult because we know the news that's coming or the situation that's coming, or we know that they're going to have an opportunity to act selflessly. And we don't tell them anything. We don't say, hey, there's a reward if you do the right thing. We just sit back and watch. And in those moments, they don't know that there's a possible reward, but they know the culture of our family and what we're hoping from them. And so when we see them respond selflessly, or we see them respond well to bad news or to a difficult situation, we see them planting seeds that our family values, we celebrate that. And I actually look for opportunities to reward that and to celebrate that and to give them something to reinforce, like, that is good fruit in you and that deserves good reward in your life. I believe that that's how God looks at us. I think that he is looking for us when we have opportunities in those moments to plant a good seed, to take the culture of his house, not what I should naturally, organically respond in the moment, but the culture of the kingdom, and to plant those kinds of seeds. So we've got to pause and ask, what am I planting? Whether it's in the middle of an argument, whether it's in the middle of parenting, whether it's struggles at work, we have to ask the question, what am I planting? How am I responding to this? Am I investing? Am I planting seeds for emotionally healthy relationships? And I'm planting seeds for wisdom and generosity in my finances. Am I planting seeds for not reacting to challenges, but sowing life? But most importantly, am I planting seeds for pursuing his presence? There's nothing that will yield greater reward in our lives than getting into the presence of Jesus. And that idea that Bill talked about of just withdrawing into the Spirit and just encountering him and just saying, I love you, I see you, I'm with you. You know, in Matthew 6, Jesus explains how we can pray. And he says, when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners so they may be seen by others. I tell you that they have their reward to the full, but you, when you pray, go into your inner room. Some versions say, go into your closet. And when you have shut your door, pray to the Father who sees you in secret, and he will reward you. In that day, most people didn't have closets. So that word really doesn't quite fit the situation. And most people didn't actually have, like, rooms. A lot of times it was just kind of like one big open room, and you have the front door. You know, you might have, like, curtains or dividers or things like that, but it's not like, shut your door and nobody can hear me anymore, because they just didn't have that kind of money. That's not the kind of places that they were able to live. But what Jesus is referring to when he says your inner chamber, that inner door, is a shawl that a lot of Jews would have called a tallit. And you take this shawl, and you'd see a lot of them wearing it. You see pictures of them. But when they enter into a place of prayer, they close it over their heads. And the front of it hangs down, kind of like a curtain. And what's interesting is when you look at the Old Testament, the tabernacle, the curtain separated the rest of the tabernacle from the holies of holies, the place where the presence of God was. And so what they're doing is essentially saying, like, you have your own mini tabernacle right here. And what's crazy is they were doing that before Jesus came, before they even knew who he was, before they knew that God was going to give direct access to the Holy of Holies in actuality. It wasn't just going to be a place where you can kind of be in private and recite your prayers. It was actually intended to be a place where you shut the door and you meet with him, and he's there, he's with you. The inner chamber, the tallit. So, like, if you see somebody doing that, like, hey, dad's got the tallit over his head, like, nobody bug him, like, go talk to mom. I think this is something a lot of moms should put into practice now. Just be like, if mom's got her blanket over her head, go talk to dad. The thing that I want us to really pursue, guys, is it takes practice, it takes time, it takes an investment of testing it out, to be able to withdraw into his presence that quickly. It's available to all of us. It is not just for special people. It does not mean that you need to be praying 8 hours a day in order to be able to get that. But it does mean that there's a part of us that needs to go after it, that needs to pursue it. We have as much of God as we have wanted. You have as much of God as you have wanted. Our intimacy with Him, what we have of Him, is the fruit of the seeds we've invested in pursuing Him. As a church, guys, one of the things that we're passionate about is revival. We are passionate about seeing a move of God in this city. We've got to start here. We have to start. You have to start with asking the question, am I okay with what I have of God right now? And if I'm not, what seeds can I plant to get more? But guys, revival doesn't start when one person gets in the presence of God in their room alone. Revival starts when that person leaves the house. Revival starts when we gather together and we all have burning hearts for the Lord. Revival starts when we have invested in that time with Him to get what we need to be in His presence, to be changed by Him, so that I'm not reacting and responding to everything, but I'm planting seeds. And then we come together and we're doing that together, and everything begins to shift. Atmospheres begin to shift. That is the kind of place where people begin to get healed. It's not enough for one of us to do it. The church isn't designed for one person to go up the mountain and be a Moses and come down. Like, you guys know, like, I don't want a platform. I don't want a position. I don't want to be the guy on top. I don't even want to be the guy teaching up here every week. I want all of us to bring everything we've got to the place of saying, God, I want You more than anything else. And when we come together with that spirit, we're going to see lives changed. We're going to see people healed. We're going to see families transformed. We're going to see the beginning of massive impact in this city. So I don't say any of that as anything that I hope nobody feels like bad about or shame or anything like that, but as an encouragement that this is where we're going together. It's an invitation. This is family. And as family, I'm going to share with you guys, this is where I'm struggling and where I'm figuring out, and this is where I'm going for it, and I'm going for it with everything I have. So now my wife gets to hold me accountable for how I respond to my bad sleep. Right. But guys, that's the nature of life, is the fruit will always come. My kids are going to hold me responsible for whether or not I'm planting seeds or just responding. And God is a rewarder of those who seek Him. There's fruit that we can have, and it's the best fruit in the world. And all we have to do, listen, it's not about doing it perfectly. It's you don't go from 0 to 100. Like, you don't, I'm not gonna all of a sudden just start waking up and every time be like, oh, I'm so deep in His presence. Like, it's gonna take time. The seed is not expected to be the full plant. You don't judge a seed by its fruit. You judge a tree by its fruit, right? You have to let the seed grow. So I'm not saying that we need to plant perfection. I'm saying we need to plant desire, plant pursuit, plant momentum, have a direction. And God will bring the fruit. So let's just take a second and pray. And I'm gonna pray, but I'd also like to open it up if anybody else would like to just pray, or if anybody needs prayer. But we want to pray for our city, for this church, for people that are struggling right now. If you know of anybody that needs prayer, let's just do that. Let's just offer that up to Him. So God, we love You. We love You. We love You. We thank You that you've given us the right as Your sons and daughters to draw into Your presence. That You're available, that You're not distant, You're not far. You're right here. And God, I just ask that each person in this room would have a supernatural grace to encounter You in that place. Father, that you would make it easier than normal, that you would help them, God, to know how to plant those seeds of pursuit of your presence. God, I just pray for favor for each and every person in this room over finances, over health, over marriages. God, we give to you the things that aren't working. In fact, right now, I just ask us to open our hands, and right now, let's just give him what's not working. Guys, what's not working in your marriage, in your finances, in your emotions, in your spirit, let's not keep knocking on the same door that's not opening. God, we just release to you. We release to you right now everything in our lives that's not working. And I ask right now, Father, that you would just replace that with divine strategies, with supernatural grace, with your presence. God, I pray right now, today would begin a shift in any of these things that we are giving up to you, that right now would begin a shift where we see transition, we see a release, and God, we begin to experience what it's like when you take over and we have totally just let you take the reins. We just say that we trust you, Jesus. Help us to plant good seeds.